You're listening to the Sample Axis Podcast.
Yeah, mic check 1, 2, 1, 2.
Happy Boys back.
Yeah.
Back on the podcast.
Yeah.
Episode 41.
Already. Second episode of Q4.
Q4, we are ready to go again.
Come on.
My name is Guiga Adeoya, even though nobody asked. I'm one half of the Sample Axis Podcast.
Yeah.
I'm also my daddy's son.
Obviously.
I'm my mom's baby.
Okay.
And I'm nobody's baby.
Ouch.
The Sample Axis, administered by Boyega Nelson.
Yeah, let me try that.
Wagwan, I go by the name L-A-Y-C-O-N, and you're listening to the Sample Axis Podcast. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. What do we have today? We have a lot.
Yeah, okay. Not too much. I feel like I should introduce myself.
Yeah, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, it's not necessary. Everybody knows that. No, Nelson is the one talking
right
now.
It's not really necessary. I represent you.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I just realized that the first time we ever did this, half of the Happy Boys Sample Action. Remember when we did that? Yeah, on Cha-Cha, yeah. I would just decide to just, you know, flow, and it was cool. That's cool. Alright, okay, yeah, you know what we do? This is Sample Access Podcast. The name says it all. We talk about samples every single time. We have a quartet. This is our usual style. We're back to our usual style.
Is this an
style.
International episode? No.
No, but it sounds like an international episode because it feels like we're tapping. But this is how most of our episodes have been. But
because
it's just that we've had, like, you know, the times where we would pick older Nigerian songs sampling or new Nigerian songs sampling older Nigerian songs. I think that's what the past three episodes we had, the King Sonyeade episode, we had the Kwame episode, Bonnie Mack. It was all Afrocentric, but now
more Nigerian.
Yeah, more Nigerian, but now we're going back to the hip hop.
It's because of the contemporary Nigerian energy. You know, when the people who disrupted the sound, we always talk about Venom Marioge and the Alexitos. What they were doing in their time.
Yeah,
in the 1990s, in the early 2000s, people were sounding more foreign. And that's why on episodes like this, we would want to
talk about foreign music.
Because that's how we tilted. We tilted from traditional African...
traditional folklore, from juju, the juju, yeah.
And then to contemporary Afro beats that picked a lot from hip-hop and R&B and everything else. So we will continue to see a lot of, you know, samples that relate to more foreign music.
Yeah.
Because we have moved from that era of more Nigerian to more American. Even though it's going back now, because someone tweeted that at some point Nigerians were sampling and doing covers of American music.
There was a time now. And obviously I think we have one of them on today's quartet.
Yeah.
But
the point now is that we have reversed the equation. Americans are now doing Escobar. And that's a good time to.
And that's something to ride on, basically, because everybody's talking about the fact that we need to work on that. And maybe in the next 10 years, people should want to sample sounds from. And it's not like they don't sample sounds. I mean, we have people like J. Cole, you know, picking up Fela, as well as, you know, Jay-Z or G Electronica, taking songs from Africa, sounds from Nigeria, in fact. And it's not a weird thing.
But it's not big like that.
Yeah. It's more or less like we like to sample their stuff a lot. And obviously, if you check down the line, if you, especially the late 90s down to like the early 2000s, that range of 5 years, maybe from 98 down to like 2003, there was this, you know, crazy vibe of, okay, let's pick up sounds from these American guys and sound like that.
Yeah.
And you said something about Venom Marioge and Alexito. Those guys didn't, they learned the sound.
Okay.
They didn't bite off the sound.
Oh, okay. They learned and they created their sound.
Yeah, they
created their own version of
exactly.
the sound.
So like, okay, you sound like this, I'm going to create Nigerian Survive
of that genre.
And sounds maybe towards the same level or the same, you know, trying to be on, it's like standard.
Yeah.
That's basically it, you know.
That's,
it's like mimicking. You understand? Like, you can't say Usher is trying to sound like Michael Jackson.
No.
He's just learning and saying, what can I do like this man? Although you hear the old, you know, the riffing and the sound management, the sounding structure. My one sound is like The Weeknd. I don't know why this is popping into my head right now, but of course, this is how
they
go.
They have their own identity.
Yeah. Like The Weeknd. I listened to a song recently and I'm like, if somebody didn't tell me, like, anything about what this song or how the song was made and you told me Michael Jackson sang the song, and I said, yeah. Because I heard everything. It was so much like Michael. But that's what Nigerians did at the time. And now we moved on to the part where you know, we are the one running things right now. I'd like to see more of our songs being sampled.
Before we go to the quartet, right? I have talked about Nigerian music, Nigerian musicians doing a lot of American-like music in the early, not early 90s.
Early 2000s, late 90s to early 2000s,
We have moved to, not so much, but Americans tilting more to our sound.
There's
an actual industry shift with the Beyoncé album. Maybe not an industry shift, but there was a major wave of Afrobeat from the 2016 down to now.
I don't like to say it was, like, is still
going. It's still going on, but the major shifts happened with Drake.
The one dance thing. Ojolegba feature, and then
so like 2014,
2015,
Everybody, Beyoncé is on the wave. I mean, Wale has been on this gospel for the longest time.
Come on, Wale.
I learned, he said, I pitched up or suggested Whiskey to Rock Nation early on. Like, you guys better poach him or sign him
now.
He was just making that comment, like, Whiskey. This was 2014 or thereabout.
Yeah.
And then the lights came.
Yeah, and now Whiskey is the biggest act in Nigeria.
So, I just want
Nigeria.
To end this part of the podcast by saying that someone I respect was talking about, you know, the need to sample more Nigerian music. We have always talked about we talked about Eyo Gogo.
Yeah, lots of songs, actually. There are a couple of songs, especially the highlight
Alexito,
ones.
Wisdom.
The ones that are not popular.
Alexo, Wisdom.
Alexo. There are a couple of songs that are not so popular, especially the ones in like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the generic sound that we had in the early 2000s. I'm talking about the High Life guys. There were a couple of albums that came out around that 2003 to 2007. Those guys were fire. Like, I would like to hear more.
Some people are doing it. Flavor, Fino, they are doing a lot of Osadebe. They are doing Victor Waifu and all of that.
Yeah.
So, but we need to see more from this generation. And I expect, I mean, look at Two-Face and Bongo Zikwe.
Yeah, that was really cool. Very refreshing.
Two-Face had a feature with late Dr. Victor Laya before he passed, which is good.
I think you sent me something recently.
Sheyishe and Orlando Julius. So we want to see more of old generation connecting to new generation to preserve those years.
Yeah.
Now to the quartet today, what do we have?
All right, so we have quite an amazing quartet. This one is quite fresh. We're talking about two classics in Nigerian music. Maybe one is a classic, the other one not so much a classic, but a personal song for a lot of people.
I wonder which one is a classic, but go ahead.
Not classic as in classic.
I don't
music
think any
that is
of,
mad
any of the two is a classic.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, what I'm trying to say is
phrase it properly.
I want to phrase it properly
before
now.
Before the
because of you know, I'm not saying like classic, like like it's classic sound or it's like a timeless sound. No, like at the time it was bopping.
It was a hit
at the time.
Let's not abuse words.
Yeah. I take that back. I'm sorry. Please keep this. Don't cut this off.
Okay, sir.
I'm sorry. All right. So the hit at the time. Now the first one was a big hit. The other one wasn't so much of a hit, but people really like low key loved it. You understand? Now the first one I'm saying is a hit was Soji by Rasky.
I disagree.
Soji was a hit.
If you say one was low key, one was a hit.
Yeah, Belinda was low key.
Belinda wasn't low key. Low key.
It was. Belinda and Shakomo came out around the same time.
I think I agree though.
Yeah?
I think I agree.
Yeah, Belinda and Shakomo.
The same album, Sef.
Same album, Peace Nigeria. So it came, if Belinda came in before or way before Shakomo, maybe it would have taken that.
Yeah, I remember.
But
Shakomo
took the entire. So Belinda was that song where.
I remember now. Belinda was like the number three song.
Exactly.
You know when you play an album according to
Shade,
the importance of the.
I remember Shade more.
According to the
than
importance
Belinda.
Of the song.
Exactly.
You would play Shakomo first.
Yeah.
Maybe another song.
Shade now.
And then you will now play.
Exactly. That's the Belinda. List for me. I know Shakomo. I know Shade. Because of Pasoma was in that song.
And then Belinda.
And then there's Belinda. And even Belinda said, I feel like Belinda was more for like the generation of then. Like my uncles at the time. They're like, this is the thing, you know. And I didn't even listen to it at the early stages. I listened to it like 2-3 years afterwards. Like maybe 2002, 2003.
Yeah, I listened.
And it came out
1999.
So basically, but I knew there was a vibe. But Shakomo was the, come on, there was no birthday party at the time.
Yeah, no way.
So yeah, that's the first, the quartet actually, what we're talking about right now. Rasky Soji obviously sampled DMX's Stop, Stop, Shut up now, open up, shout. Oh, no. Yeah, I'm sure this song is a classic. Everybody knows this. And it's cool because
Rough Riders Anthem.
Rough Riders Anthem is like a song that I'm sure anybody that just watched TV a lot at the time knew the song. Like, you don't know what they were saying. I'm sure
but
our parents
everywhere.
I'm sure our parents
wild.
Would have wanted us to know.
I believe this was around the same time Chakademos and Players was popping in Nigeria.
The music was popping, but Chakademos and Players was 92.
But it was still popping.
Exactly.
See the entire mix.
Yeah, yeah, obviously. No, no, yeah. Even till today. I mean, you want to do a proper reggae mix. Come on. Chakademos, you have to sprinkle it with a beautiful bit of Chakademos and Players. And yeah. So the Belinda song was sampled from Grady Harrell.
Grady Harrell. I always say Gary Adele.
Grady Harrell. Now Grady Harrell.
Grady Harrell.
His story is quite interesting, but I'm very sure.
Which one are we starting with?
We need to start with DMX's Rough Riders Anthem.
Are you sure though?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. DMX's Rough Riders Anthem. Yeah. Because you know what? We want to pay, you know, homage to the man. He died
homage.
This year.
Homage, please.
Okay. It's not homage.
No, I don't care for all that.
Oh, yeah, because you know I'm correct.
I don't
it's
care
homage.
If you're correct.
I've heard somebody say homage.
It's like voyage.
Voyage. Come on. Like, okay, we're going to
pay homage to DMX.
To DMX, the man. He died this year, 9th of April 2021. It was really a sad time. But people came out, you know, to pay their due respects and to show how much influence the man. I've talked about this man so much, and I feel like to an extent, I kind of understand him because, you know, I don't understand what his troubles, obviously, because I didn't face any of that. So I can't really put myself on the level. But we kind of like, we like similar music. So to an extent, yeah, when people say we like, I'm sure people are like, what's Nelson saying?
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, the best song for DMX, for a lot of people that do not know, is Atlantic Star Silver Shadow, which is also my best song.
Before you continue with this story, because I know there is a lot on it.
Yeah.
And I almost don't relate like that. I only know DMX from, you know, the famous DMX.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to let you have a role. Just don't go too far.
All right.
I'm going to free you right now. When I say free, I mean that technically and for real. So,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Go on a rant.
All right. So, yeah, DMX, he did this Rough Riders Anthem. But at the time, it was kind of like a sound that wasn't supposed to happen because, you know, Swizz Beatz Kazim Dean was the one that made that song happen. Now, Rough Riders Anthem, for a lot of us who don't know who Rough Riders are, Rough Riders at the time was Rough Riders Entertainment. Now, Rough Riders Entertainment, these guys were cool. These guys were out of the box. They had people like The Lox. They had, you know, Eve on the record label at the time. And they were a big deal, basically. They were a big deal. And this was the year that DMX released two albums back to back, which was fire. The first one was It's Dark and Hell Is Hot, and the second one was Flesh of My Flesh and Blood of My Blood, which was a classic, basically, because you think about it and like, yeah, he dropped two albums that went number one in the Billboard, and it was huge at the time. And Rough Riders Anthem, the beginning of how the song came to be, apparently it wasn't supposed to even be a song that was supposed to blow up, I guess. I think the idea of the song was that it was just supposed to be like a song to complete the album, because as at the time, you know, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot had been, like, they had been recording stuff for the album from like 1996. And DMX, you know, as a hip-hop head that he was at the time, he was really hard on the, yeah, we needed to get something that was classic, something that was hip-hop-y. If there's anything that hip-hop-y at the time, you know, something that was hard and strong, like how it's going down, you understand? I had big, you know, big reception. Get at me, dog. You know, where my dog's at? You know, and that was a big one at the time, and everybody was actually feeling it at the time. And this particular album that I was talking about went to number one, obviously, in the Billboard chart, and it sold like 251,000 copies in the first week. So that kind of like makes it, you know, being one of the best albums. I mean, I think it was triple platinum. I'm not so sure, but I'm sure it sold like 4 million records at the time. And this is the entire album. Even though the first song, which is this Rough Riders Anthem, sold 2 million records. Even though it was the second song off that album, it was probably like one of the last set of songs they recorded, because they had been recording songs from 1996 down to 1998.
Rough Riders Anthem, for people like me who don't know,
all right,
is made up of who and who?
The only people I can remember right now from the top of my head, The Lox, you know, The Lox, Jada Kee, Styles P, Chic Louch.
And then Rough Riders were,
yeah, the owner of Rough Riders, the main guys in charge, Yaquinwa Dean and Darren Dean, Siobhan Dean, they are actually uncles or cousins, sort of Kazim Dean. Now, Kazim Dean is Swizz Beatz. So, okay. DMX was with them recording. That was his first album. He was preparing for his first album that was going to be dropped in 1998. But as all this time, he was recording, you know, they were bringing in different producers because they had a lot. One of the things that Rough Riders had at the time is like the early days of Starboy. They had many producers on ground, you know. It was like a producers. At some point, people were thinking, ah, is Rough Riders just... This guy is basically, you know, producers. Because they had lots of producers on ground
musical
at the time.
Guys.
Yeah, and they were musical guys. And so, like... They brought in their brother at the time. Swizz Beatz was not making beats yet, so they brought him in to the, you know, the group. Entertainment group and all that, and they decided to put a couple of guys in charge of, you know, Swizz Beatz to understand what these guys what beats are all about, and they taught him. But as at the time, Swizz Beatz was not making beats that were sounding like him. He was making beats that were sounding like derivatives of these guys that taught him.
This is the generation of Scott Storch, most definitely.
Yeah, obviously Scott Storch was coming into his own at the time.
I don't know, Justice League, Metro Boomin.
Metro Boomin is like later.
Later, of course. What's this guy's name? DJ Mustard.
Mustard was 98. Mustard was already in now.
Really?
Yeah, but like it wasn't just loud. This is them DJ Khaled's time.
Wow.
That was when people like DJ Khaled were spinning records. So basically all these guys were there. But Mustard wasn't like a big deal, but he must have been around making music.
Back to DMX.
So DMX, he was very notorious. He was still a gangster. Mm. I mean, at the time, there were stories back then that, you know, Swizz Beatz would even see, and DMX himself, too, before he passed, would say stuff like, they would go to take a cab and ditch the cab. So they were still in that, you know, crazy vibe. But there was a good thing that happened at the time. Swizz Beatz and DMX, they hit it off early. So you know how, like, you bring somebody new that is young into the studio,
I mean,
and then this other guy, you guys you know, hit it off. And they had that, you know, cool energy. Like, oh, yeah, I'm your guy. And they were like that for a very long time, really. And, you know, when Swizz Beatz started making beats, he now started making beats that reminded him of where he was from. I mean, I think they were in New York at the time, and Swizz Beatz, you know, represented Atlanta as well. So he would merge things from both sides, you know, and he would play beats for everybody. And of course, the realest person for Swizz Beatz was DMX, because DMX would tell you, ah, this beat is trash, this beat is good, but it were good. You know, those kind of, like, you know, relationship now. Mm. I can tell you your show is trash and go and work on it.
Before we talk about the song a lot more, what is DMX's discography like? I mean, are we talking many albums?
Yeah, 8 albums, actually. His 8th one was the posthumous album that was released this year. He has 7. Out of the 7, like, every single... I think 6 of them made top 10.
Where was the hiatus? There was a time he was off.
Oh, yeah. There was a time he was off. I think 2004 to, like, 2021 or so. He just went off after, like, 2010.
But
there
was 7 albums came between 98 and when? While he was dealing with life and all of that.
You know, there was a time where he struggled, where he almost went bankrupt. Like, he actually did go bankrupt at some point. You know, he said that he wasn't, you know, okay at the time. He had a lot of issues. There was one time he was actually busy. People were saying a lot of legal troubles, health issues. There was a time he went skinny for a long time. The hiatus you're talking about is 2006 to 2012. But I remember 2012, he was doing a lot of interviews. Now I remember this so much because even though I didn't know DMX a lot, he was in my face a lot. Because I used to watch a couple of shows that time when I was younger. Not younger, but like 2010, 2009. So I would see a lot of interviews. And DMX was popping up in a lot of them at the time. Because he was still facing issues, you know. He was skinnier than usual. He wasn't looking so good. There was one point where, I don't know why this is relevant, but I'll just say it was a time where he wore the same, like, dress, top and bottom, to 2 different interviews. And then he became a thing. You know how weird the celebrity life is. You know, the kind of person he was at the time. He came out and was like,
what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Like, why are people making me feel like, I understand that I might not be in the best of places right now, but like, am I not allowed to? What if I did this in the same day? Or what if I just decided to? And you guys are now making it. You know how media is like now.
You know, social media and all of that.
Yeah.
Can be messed up. But I was talking about sound, yeah?
Yeah.
We were listening to that song, Rough Riders Anthem.
Yeah, and I said something
just a while before we started recording, and the beat is so raw, so raggedy, so...
It was very hip-hop.
Brash.
But the thing was... his rock is the rock vibe.
That energy is that street sound?
No, it's not.
Okay.
As at the time, I mean, you're talking about 1998. At the time, you're talking about people like dropping records like Regulate. You get, there was a tone, there was a flow. You understand? It wasn't too hard. You're talking about times where they were releasing the posthumous albums, you know, for like people like Biggie and Tupac. So everything was kind of like not so. If you wanted to do hip hop and it was rough, it had to be. You know, there was this, but then you're now bringing. Dun, 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 dun. That sounds like a rock song. Everybody wanted down to get it down. You know, yeah, like gang. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't. It was off. It wasn't a sound that everybody really wanted off, to. Though. It was actually off at the time because people
connect,
would say
a side of that sound could connect easily to hip hop.
Yeah, but you
and
know,
then in the way he handled want, the
you,
beat.
Yeah, you would want to argue that nah, this wasn't like. I'm sure the hip hop heads at the time would say, "This is not hip hop." Like the basic beat is not hip hop.
Who were the people just before that year?
Just before that you're talking about.
Jada Kiss was around.
Jada Kiss was around. This was like
Jay-Z, and the sound was more
everybody basically. Everybody
that wasn't the sound. That wasn't
exactly.
Jay-Z's Dead President was
Nas was doing his records at the time. You know, Tupac just passed the year before. Common had just released an album.
Yeah,
you get to, and it was a certain vibe for hip hop. I know how hip hop is. Hip hop. At the time, till like the trap records came in, used to evolve. So if this is a new hip hop sound, everybody's following in. Like the early 2000s, when hip hop was completely diluted, you had songs like Dilemma, you had songs like What's Love,
50 Cent,
with you know Ja Rule, you know Fat Joe doing you know stuff with Ashanti, 50 Cent doing Candy Shop. You know, everybody diluted their sound, although they still try to sound like you know punchlines. 8 bars, 16 bars, strong bars, but you still made it sound like
more
it was more sleek.
Now.
You understand? More okay. Like, that's the word. More cute, not rough. And then going back to 1998 when nobody was listening to stuff like that, and Swizz Beatz does a beat like that. Obviously, DMX told him the beat was trash. Yeah. Like he said, it's like, yo, bro, I don't want this beat. But Swizz Beatz wanted DMX to rap on that record. In fact, it's been said that DMX didn't want that record to be done at all. So what happened was that one of the leaders of Rough Riders at the time, I think it was the eldest out of all of them. I think it's the eldest. I can't remember his name right now, but it was one of the deans, the eldest in Rough Riders. At the time, DMX used to love to gamble a lot. So he would gamble on anything. So they started to gamble on cards. Listen, I'm telling you true stories from these guys. Gambling on cards, you know, you're just in the cards thing, like, oh, yeah. So he told DMX that, okay, this guy just made a beat for you. You don't like it. This is what's going to happen. If you win, you're not going to record this. But if you lose, you have to record this, and you have to record it now. You know that kind of vibe in the studio? You have to record it now.
I'm down, don't
and like,
worry.
So he's like, I'm down, I'll do it. And then he loses, right? And he was really angry at it because he didn't want to. But then he wrote his lines. And then he went in. I said he did it once.
Yeah.
So obviously the strength, the anger you hear is pure. It's like, oh, but it wasn't like anger of like I'm disgusted or anything.
It made it perfect. It's like, the energy was perfect for the beat.
Yeah. I said like, oh, niggas wanna try. Niggas wanna that. You know, all I see is pain. All I feel is rain. You get
it was meant to it was meant to happen. So push that forward to everything else that DMX did. So later in life he would be very religious, a pastor, a deacon essentially.
Yeah, and you know,
but before that, from Rough Riders Anthem and everything else, there were other song. Ludacris did Move B. Is Rash Sound the definition of DMX music ultimately?
Well, you can say that in the early days, maybe yes, because this guy was living a violent life. He doesn't like that was one of the things when I got to know about him. When we started talking, about, you know, doing the research again, and I decided to start, you know, going back and listening and seeing all the interviews I had seen before, there was something that was happening all the time in all the interviews. DMX was very open. He talked about his troubles, what he faced as a human being, how he was a bad person. I mean, that's how I got to know, and I know I've said this, but that's how I got to know his, like, favorite song at the time, Silver Shadow, because he said it. It's like, there was a time I was in a bad place. I would go and rob things, you know, go and get things from people because that's what I felt. That's what I felt like was the right thing to do. Go and use force and do things, you understand? And then he was in jail, and then that's when he became a born-again Christian because people said he was a born-again Christian when he died.
I think all in all, he lived what we could say fulfilled life. Maybe not, maybe fulfilled is not, I believe fulfilled would work, but at the same time, everything came full circle.
Yeah.
As violent, as rash, as...
Yeah, the name of the song I was talking about.
What this bee wants. Yeah. So yeah, just to bring that to a close, his life came full circle, right? From that rash beginning to a celebrated funeral.
Yeah.
So before he passed, just a couple years before that, he did, you know, many interviews, including the popular one.
Yeah.
There was a Drink Champs interview.
That was the one that I felt the most.
I couldn't really understand him in a lot of it. I couldn't relate to the stories, but of course,
You could tell from how he was talking that he was fulfilled.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The next thing, like, you know, there was an aura.
Yeah.
Like, he knew. I mean, there was a point he said in the interview, if I die now, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if I die now,
so I'm good. Everything, I think, came full circle for him. Yeah. One more thing was the verses with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like the fact that in his last days, there was celebration, there was acknowledgement. People gave him his flowers, you know, respect. And then when he passed, the love was overwhelming. Like,
everybody, I mean,
that's the wrong word to use. I can't say overwhelming because he wasn't here.
The
love was real.
Yeah.
Young people, old people, people of his generation.
I mean, they brought out the bikes that reminded them of, you know,
and then the parade of his, you know, corpse in the streets of New York.
Yeah.
Was really, really a big deal. New York native.
So there's this particular thing I was trying to remember. Like, I just want to talk about a couple of his songs. You were saying something about the best songs. I feel like we should talk about them. Get At Me Dog was the name of the song I was trying to understand. I was like, Where My Dog's At? And then there's It's All Good, Where The Hood At? And What's My Name? Patty Up. Y'all gonna make me lose my mind up in here. X Gonna Give It To Y'all. There's an explicit version that's really cool. Right here, How It's Going. I think How It's Going is where he had that conversation with Jesus, I guess. I think that was the particular thing he had a conversation with Jesus, which was really cool. A lot of people use that to reference him during like the burial at the time, because people were saying that particular song, I think it was also, there's also another song, The Rain, where he had, he felt like he wrote lines like he was talking to God, you know, and was like saying things directly to God. And that was really cool. Sleeping, Get On The Floor, Here We Go Again, which is actually a record.
And so many more.
Yeah.
So yeah, good place to like swave or segue. I don't want to say segue. Segue into Rasky. This is such a sharp curve.
Why?
Sharp bend.
Why is it a sharp curve?
Because it's a whole different
vibe entirely.
Like, from New York to Lagos, Rasky did a song in 2003.
But album that had Sweet My Sweetie.
Yeah, 2003. Okay. And I think before that, this song
Soji had dropped
maybe,
seemed like an O2 thing,
maybe O2, yeah, O2 likely. Kenny's Music, Rasky, What Do We Know, the album Idan,
yeah, Magic.
So from what he sounds like, people who listen to his music would know that this is a Yoruba guy, street guy, maybe not street guy, but he is not the
but like he was not a top tier artist. He was not the idea of a top tier artist. He was supposed to be.
Maybe that could be right, but that could be wrong as well. Let me phrase this properly.
Okay, all right.
He was not.
I want to explain what I mean by a top tier artist.
Let me finish, please.
Okay.
He was not a good orator. He didn't speak the English language well.
But people like Daddy Shoki.
But when you
junglist,
said, when you said top tier artist,
yeah,
I would disagree with that, because language does not define the
that's
art.
What I'm saying. I'm not
your accent or your use of English does not define the art.
I am not talking about accent,
but you said top tier artist.
Yeah, that's right.
He could be top tier. Okay, he didn't achieve top tier at the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But he made hit songs. Idris Abdul Karim was rapping, not exactly that, really didn't have any reason.
But still, when you call top tier artist in the 90s down to like the early 2000s, you would call Idris Abdul Karim.
Yes.
What I'm saying
hold
is,
hold on. Let's sort this out.
Okay.
Rasky could have been a top tier artist.
Really?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
He was making songs with Obesere.
Was he?
When you say top tier artist,
was he?
Maybe we need to deconstruct that, but maybe he wasn't. But the point I wanted to make to clear out is, he was playing music that wasn't really meant for him.
I mean, Mad Melon and Mountain Black didn't play music that was supposed to be popping, but it popped.
They were not
the greatest orators.
We are still not getting each other.
I'm saying anybody could have made music and blew up. It's like Small Doctor that we have now.
Did you get the point I was driving
at?
I
get where you are driving
at. He does not speak the English language well.
But I'm saying that's not enough to say that's what hindered him from attaining greater success.
Maybe I agree. But my point...
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Just to be clear, is the way he was rapping...
Yeah, like it was something off for him.
It was off.
Because that's what I remember
he said... He was like, okay, it's enjoyable, so we would enjoy it. And so right now, he's not going to fly. That sound, that culture, that way of speaking will not fly today. That's what Vico does. Do you get my point?
See, now what I was trying to avoid is what you're doing now.
So I think with these few points of mine, I've been able to confuse you.
I love confusing you. That see, this that is what this is what I think.
I've made my point.
This is what I think. Rasky, it was good,
and he's a legend. No, he's a
no
legend.
He was good, but he didn't have the it factor that every he didn't have the it factor that everybody had at the time. You know, there's always a factor we don't talk about. There's always an element. Stereo Man had one hit, but he didn't have the Stereo Man dropped an album. Eight songs. The last song on the 8 songs was Sensi Man was 8 minutes 7 seconds.
Yeah,
that was a properly done album. He knew what he was doing. He was, or he is, because he's still alive, a music person. Because you know what it is for you to take work an album at the time? That was very difficult. But he didn't have the it factor. I can bring that to a couple of artists that we have now. But I don't want to talk about them because, I mean, their careers are still wide open, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, Rasky 2003 album. Had you made your point?
Yeah, okay. I was talking about the artists that would normally not have the it factor. Doesn't mean that they were not good. Doesn't mean like they were not music people. I mean, if you're talking about Rasky right now, you'd be able to say something like Rasky did try. I mean, he has like three albums. So he's still trying even till now.
I think he...
Okay, I'm sure he wrapped it up already.
Last time he dropped something was 2016.
Okay, that's like 5 years ago.
Yeah, so it was just a single.
Yeah, he might have said...
I read a report where he was saying that people don't really...
rate Nigerian the OGs anymore. Like, people
and
don't...
So,
but the thing is...
I think it's as good as...
I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done. But the thing is, he had a good run. He had a good run.
You can't mention the early 2000s.
I mean, like you're good. You have when you have more than me. I believe this. When you have more than one hit, because he had more than one hit.
Yeah.
At ready.
And the talent. Okay, and so the talent may have been in question at some point, but for me,
talent. I don't think so.
For me, listening in retrospect, I doubted. Soji made me doubt it. As far as about how why are you going like this? But then when I listened to other songs, he did a song about Pains of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Did a song My Sweetie, a sample of that man Bonnie Mack. At Ready. There were other songs that he did. Kenny's Music at first, the first album, and then another album was like The Flavor Entertainment. You know, continuously dropping something. That's something I respect. And
yeah.
So, after listening to a couple more songs, I saw that even though he may have been, I don't like repeating this, you know, the use of the English language wasn't really all that.
You know, I still...
But still...
Yeah?
You know what? I feel maybe if he had done something like Wally Thompson's music...
Oh, yeah, maybe that would have pushed him out
some
more.
Maybe some kind of Owambe, set up a band and do that. I don't know.
Well, you see...
But then again, he was able to get popular... You know, again, when something is on your mind, this is what I really want to do. I want to be hip. I want to be hop. I want to be, you know, popular. The new sound.
I want to be hippity hop.
I want to follow the new sound. You really can't stop people
from
being what they want to be. And, you know, at that time, he was able to score hits and, you know.
He did something really good. He did something really good because if you think about Soji and Antiradi, and Soji was such a parody of the sound for Rough Rider.
Yeah.
I mean, like... Come on, guy. What are you trying to do? But at the time, we're like, you know what? We work with this.
Kilo
we mess
desire.
With this sound.
Sweet banana.
You know, I'm like, I'm like, what?
Anything. The song is funny as well.
See, there are a couple of things on that song. I'm like, what?
The opening line of the song, I think it's like, Gary Nimo, wah.
Hello.
I'm like, Baba, why?
Ati Devi, he did it. Ati Devi, he did it. Do you know he modulated that?
That's the point I'm making. His music, he may have been funny. The song, yeah, Soji was funny to a lot of people, especially Gen Z. But you would respect his ability, or appreciate his ability to make a song. I listened to the song with Obesere. It's not bad. The song with LKT Mukoko, those are actual, he could make you dance. So again, part of what he did was he made Soji a parody and made people think like, I'm a hip-hop guy, but for real, you're a singer. You could rap, but the singing is more of your happy place. You can make a dance song. That's why Mukoko Ati Ready, those are vibey songs, but you can't replicate Soji because it was a parody, so to
obviously
speak.
And it was like the perfect like opening for him,
yeah,
because at the time,
yeah,
you know, nobody knew him before attention. You know, Soji, and then after Soji they got to know Ati Ready, which came out later, but people messed with that sound.
Yeah.
People loved the Ati Ready. It was such a vibe.
And I think you suggested an episode in the future where we talk about people who, was it you or someone else, who blew up from covers?
Oh, I didn't talk about that.
Oh, not you. Whiskey, holla at your boy.
Oh, I think I probably did that.
Banky W, Ebute
Metta. Oh, yeah, I was the one. That was a very long time. I still remember. Wow.
Rasky,
do you know there are many things I was supposed to remind you?
Adekunle Gold, Sade.
Yeah.
Those are covers. And that was their breakout songs.
And led to...
Those were
their
breakout songs.
And you know, these people you just called Banky W, Wizkid, Adekunle Gold, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing artists.
And then they started to, you know...
build on that. And they went on to become, you know, juggernauts in the industry.
Listen widely. Are we done with Rasky?
Well, we not so much talk about Rasky, but
the
Rasky
three albums
did it okay.
That we know. There was
Magic Idon, and then there was the Ati Ready album.
The Evolution.
Is it Evolution?
Yeah, there was something Evolution.
I don't remember the Evolution.
Yeah, Evolution. There was another one. Let me try and remember this. It would take me some time to bring this up. Rasky, where you at? Mukoko. By the way, LKT must have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I got to know LKT like, on the Yahuze song.
No, but it was around before.
That was 2007.
Six. Yahuze was 2007, I mean.
Yeah, Yahuze was 2007. Albums by Rasky, there was Magic, Idon, Kenny's Music. There was Rasky, The Evolution. I think that was Flavor Entertainment, and then there was an album in 2013. Now You had songs like Shapali, Automobile featuring Joel Amadi, Telemundo, Woman's Worth, What Is This, Legover. Yeah, he tried to evolve. In 2016, he dropped Today featuring Puffy T, and that didn't really do enough, and that was the last we heard from him.
Yeah, you know what? You know, sometimes you try, sometimes you don't hit it. There are a couple of artists that, if we talk about them, even on the American scene, they just did one or two songs. For example, but there's some people that are just so lucky, like Carly Rae Jepsen. She has done like 2-3 songs, and even though she does not have like a whole album that we can hold on to, she has albums, but like you can't hold on to, like, you know what I'm saying, the entire. But one or two songs just blow up and becomes, I don't know, a dynamite song. I'm not going to be shocked if next year she releases a song and then it becomes maybe number one for like 30 or 40 weeks.
Time to play the two songs for the first half of this episode of The Sample Axis. Stay here.
Kawale, Soji for the next millennium. Ele Yato.
Break it down, man.
Soji, Soji, Bati Dagoko, Soji, Mano Gereko, Wegbe, Motobariko, Bamu, Soji, Soji, Bati Dagoko, Soji, Mano Gereko, Wegbe, Motobariko, Bamu.
Every blessed day.
Yeah, we're back and a special episode 41. We're talking about beautiful songs. The quartet, this on this episode is quite large in terms of range.
Not very large.
It's actually large. You have Grady Harrell. You have DMX. You have Rasky.
Nobody knows Grady Harrell like that.
Well, you're about to know now.
Okay, let's
And
go.
Then there's the Remedies. Yeah. Obviously, so Grady Harrell.
We've had an episode where we talked a lot about the Remedies.
Yeah, so we'll probably just talk a little bit now.
Yeah, so Grady Harrell, essentially a backgrounder. This side of the episode is talking about Belinda, the song by the same title by Grady Harrell, sampled or covered by the Remedies.
Yeah.
In 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Who's All right, Grady so Harrell? Yeah, first off, let me start with the song Belinda. Belinda is a song that had the best of the best vibes in terms of like the 80s vibe at the time, because a lot of people were trying to do the whole
Afro
unique Afro song at the time, because that's when you had Commodores with All Night Long as well.
I think I may have heard an African sample on the original song.
That's not a sample.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Grady Harrell claims that he...
That sounds so African.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's not African. He said it was... The name of the album was Moana.
Okay.
So I think the origin, like the... It was just like having inspiration from... Not sampling. Okay. Inspiration from African sound. So he brought that in to just make it more... Because the name of the album was Moana, so you had to like give the African vibe completely on the song. And it was actually well done. I think one of the things that blew up that song was the video. The video was so Michael Jackson-like. They used to call him... They used to call him the fake Michael Jackson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they called him that for a while.
That's not good, though.
No, it wasn't good. It wasn't good, like... Michael Jackson was the biggest artist in the world.
Yeah, I feel you.
So, like, it wasn't good. They were actually, like, saying... Yeah.
But there's nothing like being yourself, man. There's nothing like being respected
for who you are. Grady Harrell actually had like a weird lifestyle in terms of how he came to be an artist. Because first and foremost, if you want to start from the very beginning, I'm sure we know about the Shalamar. Have I spoken about Shalamar here before?
I don't think so.
Shalamar, Judy Watley, Howard Hewitt, Jeffrey Daniels. Now, before that, they had a different person, I've forgotten his name now, that started the group with them for about a year. But Howard Hewitt went on to do that. Now, there's something that's called the Soul Train.
What decade?
80s.
Okay.
But late 70s now. I'm talking about late 70s now. There's something that's called the Soul Train. Soul Train Music Show at the time. They still do Soul Train Music Awards to date. It was done by Don Colenius. So Don Colenius then would, you know, invite dancers. They would just be dancing to music of 70s, 80s, disco music basically at the time. And they had three dancers, Jeffrey Daniels, Judy Watley, Howard Hewitt. The guy before, I can't remember his name right now. That's why I'm not going to talk about him so much. But like, that's the Shalamar lineup that we are all familiar with. We know songs like Full of Fire that was led by Judy Watley. We know Over and Over, Night to Remember, Friends. They have classic songs. So what happened was that Don Cornelius and Dee Griffey decided to make a group or create a group, because we were about to start Solar Records. And the only people that came in from a bigger record label to Solar Records. Solar Records means Sounds of Los Angeles Records.
Okay.
So the only group that came in, or you know, when you want to start a new record label, you need to have a top tier artist. I mean, to start with.
Yeah.
You're talking about the 80s. So they brought in the Whispers from Sony Music.
Okay.
Now RCA, which is an extension of Sony, which we'll talk about later, were trying to poach the Whispers, because were about to leave EMI at the time. So they're like, you know what? It's funny, right?
I'm lost.
It's the same record label, but like different segments want to push the other guy.
Okay.
Because of, you know, I don't know. You know how Sony has Epic, RCA, Victor, and the likes. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
It's something we can't talk about in one episode.
UMG 2, they have...
UMG 2 has, like, Interscope, everybody, like, it's just...
Jive.
Jive Records, Mango, Island. It's just so weird. There are so many. So, these guys were about to push from themselves, right? But then Solar Records got the Whispers, because Solar Records had Leon Silver's Third, and Leon Silver's Third had worked with the Whispers before, Leon Silver's Third was already like the biggest producer of the 80s, even before the 80s started. You know how weird that is? Like, you know that it's like, we knowing Don Jazzy was going to be Don Jazzy before Don Jazzy knew.
Yeah.
So like, you could tell Don Jazzy is going to be the baddest guy. Like, we know Saz.
But there was Quincy Jones.
Yeah, there was, of course. Quincy Jones was the dabbler. He was doing classical music, doing this, doing that, working with mainly Michael Jackson. So there was not like so much in terms of spreading your tentacles.
Who is that other guy? That other group of brothers, Teddy Riley and...
Oh, Teddy Riley, Babyface. Those guys came. Those were Leon Silver's proteges.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. They were the proteges of Leon Silver's third.
I'm lost. Teddy Riley, Terry Lewis.
There's Teddy Riley. There's this. We're talking about crop of producers now.
Yeah.
Teddy Riley and Babyface owned the 90s. Like 75% of the songs that were released in the 90s came off those two guys.
But Puff Daddy and Dre were around too.
Yeah, but those guys were manning one sector. These guys were manning the industry.
Entire industry.
I mean, those two of them are worth, like, those guys are worth close to $300 million each for just producing music,
okay,
and writing. These other guys are talking about, they made their money off extensions of deals. Do you get?
You just know what I'm stop here a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I was watching Jermaine Dupri, I mean, versus.
Yeah.
He challenged Puff Daddy, PDD.
Okay.
That he's not in the songwriters club of, elite club of songwriters.
Of course.
And so, we're not on the same level, my
of
bro.
Of course. I mean, that's like, see.
So, when I say that, I wonder what the industry is like when you talk 90s and you mention those two.
That's
guys.
What I said. You have to call. Jermaine Dupri is somewhere. Jerry Dupri is somewhere. But we're talking about, that's why I say top tier. The guys.
Yeah.
When you talk about the guys, you say Teddy Riley, Babyface Edmonds, LA Reid. You talk about, even I'll be sure, before you call all these them, not like they were not good.
Of course.
They were okay. They were cool. Then you now call the kings like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Those guys did everything. Anything from Janet Jackson that you know that was top 10, there's a 90% chance they wrote the song. You understand? So those guys were balling.
They were the top guys.
So, and that's the same thing that happened to Solo Records. I'm trying to tell the story of Grady Harrell so that we understand basically what happened. So Grady Harrell was supposed to be the third person in Shalaba. Shalaba is one of the best groups of all time.
So setting up the group there is like someone...
A process.
Someone thinking who should join in.
Exactly. Who is
who do I
fit?
Call?
So Grady Harrell was almost the perfect
Is this... business driven or more spontaneous? Because
both ways.
Look at Star Plus, for instance, just randomly. Yeah. P Square are brothers, and so they started together.
Yeah.
Star Plus went to school together and then they started music together.
Yeah.
And like that. But this one looks like look at the M2Me story too. Yeah. It looks like this is business. We want to start a label and we need people. Call this one.
But look at
call this one. But it's not like they met each other on the road.
But M2Me. I was Tabata Aji. Tabata Aji was, she was already doing backup for a lot of people. So
I'm saying this was more recruitment than spontaneous.
Yeah. It was more recruitment. That's what I'm saying. Like, you see, Tabata Aji, even Mtume, they knew that, okay, there's this babe that does backup vocals for a lot of
Let's
people.
Let's call her.
Like, it's like Michael Jackson, when Michael Jackson was going to do Dangerous album. He knew if he was going to work with anybody, it had to be somebody that was working behind the scenes a lot. And he went for Sida Garrett. Sida Garrett had already worked with Dennis Edwards, the bad guys. Back to this now. Grady Harrell was meant to be the main guy, but for certain reasons and a lot of things that happened, Dick Griffey and Don Cornelius did not pick him.
Okay.
But he remained friends with the Shalaba guys.
Okay.
So obviously, at some point, he was going to try music. So in 1984, she started working so hard to make his first sound. And that's where Mona album, the LP, as at the time they called it LP then, the LP came out. And from the LP, had Belinda. Now, Belinda was the perfect song to push Grady Harrell.
The single.
The perfect song to push as a single, yes. And that came out as a single. And when he did, it blew up. Because the musical video seemed like, that's why they called him Fake Michael Jackson. My way, me Fake Michael, I don't mean that in bad, as a bad way. It just meant that the video was
so comparison.
Much, yeah, it was so much like what Michael Jackson did on Beat It. Not the exact video, but you know,
but
the style of moving
like,
around, turning, yeah. And this was the time where everybody was having Jerry Curls. And Michael Jackson was still black at the point.
Now, you talked about Beat It, yeah? Beat It was more rock, more...
Yeah.
More pop.
Yeah.
This was pop too, but it had the Afro
Calypso, yeah. Even he says
Afro
Calypso, yeah.
Afro Calypso,
yeah.
Shout out to Afro Calypso podcast, by the way. So this sound had... Go, Kotiko.
Yeah.
So it felt so African. Was that the reason why it was so familiar with Nigeria and Africa?
You know how it is, yeah.
This was 1980 what?
1984.
Okay.
So as at the time, you know how it take one year or two years before it gets to us here. So we probably started digesting the song in like 86.
We don't know that.
I said we probably started.
And you could have gotten here
earlier.
Well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like, but you know that it was a thing. Normally you had to take like, it took a while. But I'm saying that's why we started digesting. Let's say 85, we started digesting very well.
Okay.
So yeah, obviously, it's the same thing that happens in every sound. When you hear something familiar with you.
85 to 99
Yeah.
Where was Idris Abdulkarim in 85, for instance?
Idris Abdulkarim, I don't know. Maybe
he was in Kano somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. Chilling. And listening to Nana A.E. and rapping on it. I'm at the shibidi with the baby. Look at the beats.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he knew the song at the time. But if like songs did, songs would bounce into the 90s. A song in 85, for instance, would continue to get airplay.
Yeah, yeah, till the early 90s.
And so, because I know the story of Nire Power, Mio Shakomo, how they did a sample or like they did a freestyle at Ray Power, and Kenny's was like, you guys just bounced a song like that, and that's, oh yeah, let's record.
Yeah.
So in Near Africa, it was actually Nire Power because they Shakomo. Went to, so that tells you they were listening to a lot of foreign music and they were making parodies in their own.
Should we call them parodies?
No. They were making covers. My bad.
All right.
So Grady Harrell, 85, Remedies, 99.
What was the connect? Belinda was big.
Yeah, that must have been the reason.
That's the only connect that we can say. Belinda was big.
Very popular.
And it wasn't just one of those songs. It was those songs that one of those songs that did not want to die.
Do we have a producer for this?
Well,
for Belinda. By Remedies.
No.
And we should, but in any case,
I searched.
They toned it down.
Yeah.
What genre switch places?
Afro calypso to pop. African pop. No, Belinda.
Belinda.
Belinda. He's talking about the song Belinda. Yeah. Their version was talking about Idris Abdulkarim's girlfriend.
Then there was Yoruba.
Really? Yeah.
That was a true story.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, that's why it was very touchy.
There was Hausa in the song.
Yeah. He was talking about his girlfriend that passed. Girlfriend that helped him to get into stardom, like get the fame. He talked about the girl like gathering money to take him to Spain so that he could improve his. So there was a lot of, it was a heartfelt song, And of course,
Ed Remedy came through
like he would always come through. I still feel like Ed Remedy was the Remedies.
Well.
You know what? I'm saying now, no, don't get me wrong.
They were all Remedies. No,
two of them. Because before they became anything, Tony Tetsula had left. The group already.
Tony Tetsula wasn't part of Shakomo.
No.
Oh,
he didn't do anything in Shakomo.
I saw a performance where he performed.
Yeah, he performed with them, but he didn't do anything in Shakomo.
Oh, wow, cool. But they were both Remedies.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The Shigidi Bigidi was a huge part of the song.
Yeah, Shigidi Bigidi Bigidi.
Oh, the Shigidi Bigidi. That was, of course, now, it's the same way we always argue. I was arguing with a friend, or, you know, I was talking with a friend about Forever Young, Mr. Hudson and Jay-Z, who made the song. And he goes, Mr. Hudson made the song. The hook. I'm Mr. Young, you're letting me forever.
Yeah.
We don't have the power.
But you do know that song was a sample, right?
But of course, almost every song is a sample.
No, but this one, they carried the entire thing. Mr. Hudson just redid the song again.
In any case, the song is a song because of Mr. Hudson's.
Yeah.
Again,
that
we cannot.
That was magical.
That's what you do when you talk about Ed Remedy being the Remedy. No. Jay-Z gave iconic Lifetime verses on that song.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
But it's easy for us to say. I mean, look at Empire State of Mind in New York. So it's easy to like get carried away with the R&B guys.
It's like saying Encore by Numb.
Encore.
Do you want more? We're in for Linkin Park. It was really nice.
So they complement each other, basically.
Yeah. That's the word. They complement each other.
The Remedy wasn't the Remedy. They were both.
All right, I've waited. That's my opinion. I felt like, you know, she really connected to like that 90s sound, and he knew what exactly was doing, right?
Before we wrap this up, are we missing something on Grady Harrell?
Grady Harrell, contemporary at the time. We talked about Shalama, talked about Atlantic Star, whatever artists you can think about in the 1980s.
Lakeside,
everybody at that time that were trying to get Cyndi Lauper, Michael McDonaldson.
I Donna Summer.
Donna Summer was Agba. I feel like I shouldn't call Donna Summer in that level. Yeah, she gets like I saying Diana
There's
Ross.
There's a lady I found out, Simmons. There's a lady I just got to, like, I just stumbled on her stuff on YouTube. Ah, man. I think it's something not Donna Simmons.
Donna Summer.
She was a different. I hate this. Simmons.
I would like to call a couple of artists that people do not know. Yeah, like Media Bread, Linda Kariri, Mary James, the Mary Jane girls. Yeah, and I mean what I mean. When I mean Mary Jane, I actually mean marijuana girls. Yeah. Who else? Smokey Robinson, Rick James, Jocelyn Brown.
Yeah,
that's one of the loves of my life. That's I have a crush on Jocelyn Brown. She's an amazing woman, beautiful voice. Barbara Withers, my wife.
Hello. So I think we should just this was good.
Yeah, Grady Harrell's children are still actually doing music. Grady Harrell the second, he has Grady Harrell the third. They are like a family, like three or four of them. They're still making music.
It's like this man
trying to make sounds basically.
What's this man that was part of Eddie Levett?
Gerald Levett.
Yeah,
went on to give birth to Eddie Levett. Went on to give birth to Gerald and his sons. So the Levetts, OJ's birthed the Levett, as well as Whitehead. Whitehead Brothers. Whitehead is part of the group that made Ain't No Stopping Us Now. We're on the move. Those guys were writers as well. That's what you call Agbawo writers. You get what I want? Agbawo writers.
This was good production.
I'd really like for us to do an episode on writers.
Agbawo writers. That sounds like a good caption.
Agbawo writers, yeah. Like, I feel like we should talk about, because there are a lot of songs that when you hear that this was written by this person, like The Dream, come on. That guy has written songs that...
For Beyonce, for everybody.
Like, wild. Like Neo, come on, if you check Neo's catalog for written songs.
And there's another episode I want us to do. J Electronica. In fact, J Elect Africa. That would be the title of the episode. Close this before you take your call. Production credits.
All right, production credits. We have for Grady Harrell, Belinda, year 1984. Producer, Fred Wesley, from the album Moana. DMX, Rough Riders Anthem, I already said it. Swizz Beatz, Kazim Dean, It's Dark and Hell is Hot, 1998. Raski, Soji, year 2003. Album, Magic, you know. And The Remedies, Belinda, 1999. Peace, Nigeria.
Follow Sample Access Pod on Twitter and everywhere else. We'll see you next time. We out.
Some blessings, yo.
This track is dedicated to my late girlfriend Rashida Masha, sure. And all those brothers who lost their lady and ongoing. Rest in peace, disease. I want your brothers to know this fact that you don't play games. You know what I'm saying? That's how it is.
Sample Access, administered by Boyega and Nelson.
Yeah, let me try that.